You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Trump malaise begins to set in, except for it's acute and severe. Here come the Republican attacks on immigrants and Muslims and refugees. Also, Trump issues a gag order, puts crucial agencies in disarray. An operation disenfranchised voters begins in earnest with a tweet. Meanwhile, Republicans itching to cut Medicare and Social Security as the director of, or budget director nominee, heads the Senate yesterday. Trump's global gag rule, which we mentioned yesterday, turns out to be far worse than the one that George W. Bush had in place. And protests turned towards Trump's core brand proposition. Yep. And lastly, Dems need to learn to lose well. The heartwarming story of Robbie Mook's next gig. And we will get to that South Dakota ethics story. All this and more on today's program. Oh, everybody in the office today, I felt like had the exact same reaction. They came in like, oh, Jesus Christ. Is every day going to be like this? No, every day will not be like this. Some will be worse. But the first wave of executive orders are what we're going through now. And at one point, they're going to have to legislate. And then also, I think Trump dealing with the fact that he has to make his hair perfect every day will start to weigh on him in some fashion.
I don't have time for the ISIS plan.
I mean, the thing that is annoying me, I shouldn't say the thing. There's a lot of things that are annoying me. And I'm talking specifically about the news, excluding all the other things that annoy me. But in addition to just watching literally hour by hour how our government, our value system is under assault, and the almost unrestrained glee of people like Paul Ryan and Republicans who are seeing their entire wish list lock, stock, and barrel delivered that to them on a plate by Donald Trump. True, they lost the TPP, but that was already a foregone conclusion. I mean, President Obama wanted to pass it in May of this of last year. He couldn't even get the clock ticking on the 90-day comment period. Couldn't even do it for the lame duck session. It was all but dead anyways. But aside from that, this is... And I actually think it's more extreme than it would be if it was Ted Cruz. because Ted Cruz would be surrounded by people and he himself would feel somewhat constrained because Ted Cruz would know he's on the hook for it. Donald Trump, I feel quite confident. There is very little that he has signed off on over the past 2 or 3 days now. And I would even argue, if you include the vast majority of his nominees, where he would be able to articulate the foundations for those decisions beyond a 90-second conversation. I mean, I say that with, it's obviously speculation, but with a large amount of confidence. I don't think he gives a hoot about any of it, honestly. And I think he likes the idea of, like, I'm going to get things done, put stuff on my desk, I will sign it. This is exactly what was prescribed by Grover Norquist. And it's exactly what we're getting. In fact, should we play that? Matt, I'm going to IM it to you. This was Grover Norquist. This is in 2012. And, you know, this was totally predictable. One would have to be a fool to have assumed. I mean, to assume that Donald Trump, like, we don't really know who he is or blah, blah. He's a lunatic. And I think, you know, we're seeing this from just the leaks that are going on already in day 3 of his administration, which is just absurd in and of itself. But he's a lunatic who does not have a deep understanding or, frankly, care about politics. Certainly not policy. I mean, I think he likes the showmanship of it, and I think he's probably thinks a lot about what makes him look good in the same way that you would run a marketing campaign. But when it comes to the actual governance, I don't think he really cares about how they get there. I think he just needs to hear from somebody that it's going to work.
It makes him look strong.
Well, yes. I mean, but I think just signing stuff makes him look strong. I'm getting it done. I mean, my direct experience with someone who was this crazy was with Gary Busey, who was completely insane. And I was directing a show of his on day 1. We show up at some place in Taos, New Mexico. Show's out of L.A. We had traveled there to do some type of 2-part episode on his fake reality show. And the AD comes in, and I had met Gary once before, but this is the first time I was talking to him on the set. And the AD says, Gary refuses to shoot in that field. And I'm like, why? And he goes, just because he doesn't think it's right. And I just walk out there and I'm like, Gary, this is amazing, right? I mean, this is one of the few places within 700 miles where they can grow organic garlic. And the Indians say it's because of that vortex coming out of the mountain. He's like, absolutely. That's exactly why we got to shoot here. He didn't give a crap. He just wanted someone to tell him this is the thing to do. And he could just sign off on it. Here's Grover Norquist in 2012, basically, and the reason why I say that Ted Cruz probably would be not as bad is because Ted Cruz would be constrained, because Ted Cruz would understand, like, I'm on the hook for this stuff, and he would have an understanding of what he was signing. Donald Trump has no idea what he's signing, and everybody in Congress is like, he's our lightning rod. Here's Grover Norquist.
All we have to do is replace Obama. Second, we are not auditioning for fearless leader. We just need a president to sign this stuff. We don't need someone to think it up or design it. Pick a Republican with enough working digits to handle a pen to become president of the United States.
That's it. That's what they got. And last night I went in to do Chris Hayes' show, and on the feed on MSNBC, they're talking about how the president doesn't like Sean Spicer's suits. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Terrible suits.
They don't fit him well.
There's plenty of stories out there. But this is exactly, this is Sopranos, right? Tony Soprano was like, I'm not going to be the leader. I'll have my Uncle Junior be the leader.
Uncle Junior. Although, frankly, Uncle Junior, for all of his limitations, had a much better sense of leadership responsibility than Donald
Trump.
This
is even better than Grover Norquist. Imagine, because Grover Norquist is like, he's not going to have to be fearless. He's not going to have to think this stuff up. He's not going to have to. He couldn't have ever imagined that Grover Norquist would be lucky enough to get a president who would have no idea what he's signing and absolutely no interest in it whatsoever. He just wants that picture of him holding up the proclamation, right?
What about also delusional and mentally ill? How about that too, Grover?
You know what? That's even better, because like we read from Robert Reich's conversation with his buddy the other day, this is going to give them an excuse to jettison him when he starts becoming toxic for the Republicans, or starts to think like, hey, wait a second, I need to do X, Y, or Z. So this is where we're at now. And honestly, this was terribly predictable, because politicians are politicians. There is no Bullworth out there. And they know where their power base is. Their power base is what got them into office. And Donald Trump, the best play for him is going to be do exactly what the Republicans want. And when we go through the list of stuff we're going to talk about today, Donald Trump's first thought when he got into office was like, I've got to do a gag order on all the agencies so I can shut down they didn't even know what the agencies were. The only thing that is going to make this day bearable for me is that I know when I get home, I'm going to have an apron dinner waiting for me. It won't be made. I'll have to make it, which is fine, because it's fun. Although I don't know if I should be around sharp knives right now, but that aside, Apron Seafood, sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. The beef is raised humanely. They practice regenerative farming for all their produce that they use. Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 99.5% of food deserts. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they're reducing food waste. Cooking together is a lot of fun, and I find that it actually works with, my kids have an incredibly large spread. 3 or 4 to 12, essentially, now. Pretty close. And both of them can do stuff. Believe me, it's a nightmare. It's really almost, I would say, like, cooking food is almost the only thing that they both can do in some way. Because Saul can, you know, like, bang something, or we don't give him a sharp knife, but Mila can cut stuff. Saul can stir stuff. It's literally the only activity where both of them can actually enjoy themselves simultaneously. But we can't spend all our time just cooking food. So the rest of the day is a nightmare. And we haven't gotten this yet. So the spicy shrimp Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake is coming up any moment. It's available in January. Pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach. This is what also I love about Blue Apron. I don't know what garlic piccata is. I'm going to find out. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/majority. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/majority. Very, very reasonable, too. Cheaper than, like, Chinese takeout. And you're getting a quality meal that you don't have to travel for and whatnot.
Much healthier.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, let's get into this gag order for a moment. This is pretty scary, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a classmate of Saul's, and he apparently, he knows a friend who works at one of these agencies. I guess I can say EPA. We didn't do any of this over the phone, so can't be tracked. He raised another issue that his friend had told him about that was creating. And as you dig into the stories, you start to realize it. So federal agencies received word from the Trump administration to clamp down on public information and social media. And it's not just public information. It's, in some instances, all communication outside of the entity. Now, understand that in the EPA, and frankly, I'm sure in every single agency that exists, certain jobs are, and certain projects are outsourced to contracting firms. And if you cannot contact them and you're in the middle of a project, all of a sudden everything falls apart. I mean, I have no doubt that if this goes on for another couple of days, you're going to see people lose their jobs in the private sector. Because some architecture firm that's building something, some build design firm, some inspection firm, some, I don't know, IT firm, they can't afford to keep these people on payroll if they don't even know if things are going forward, if they're not even allowed to speak to the people who contracted them. It's limiting employees' ability to issue news releases, tweet, make policy pronouncements, or otherwise communicate with the outside world. It's seen in varying degrees to the EPA, the Departments of Interior, Transportation, Agriculture, Health and Human Services, places like the USDA. It's a dark time right now, said Liz Perchia, who headed EPA's Public Affairs Office during the Obama administration. People are nervous and they're scared about what they can and cannot do. They don't want to get in trouble and they want to do the right thing. People don't want to lose their jobs. Employees at Health and Human Services in the National Institutes of Health, this is a Politico piece, received emails telling them to halt external correspondence. This was meant, supposedly, according to the Trump administration officials, to halt all regulatory activity. The NIH said her agency was told to hold on publishing new rules or guidance in the Federal Register or other public forums and discussing them with public officials until the administration had an opportunity to review them. How long do you think that's going to be? At the EPA, the lockdown extends well beyond formal coordinating messaging. Aside from a block on any press releases and social media posts, A Monday memo circulated internally and obtained by Politico warned that EPA employees scheduled to speak at public events like conferences in the next month must alert Trump's team of temporary political appointees. Yesterday, maybe I guess it was on Monday, Michigan announced that the water in Flint is no longer filled with lead enough to be considered unsafe, according to EPA regulations. We have no way of knowing, as the public, if the EPA rose the threshold as to what was considered safe. People understand what I'm saying here? When the EPA changes its measure, and there's standards for everything, right? I mean, if you have a well water, you know this. You get your water tested once or twice every year or two. You get it back, gives a list of potential contaminants in the water. And what the EPA has stated is the highest amount before it becomes unsafe. I don't know, 0.2 megagrams or whatever it is of arsenic is safe. Anything above that is not. Well, there's a number where the parts per gallon or liter become unsafe in terms of lead. The EPA could have determined we're going to raise that number. There's no public pronouncements of this. We will let Michigan know. We've been authorized to tell Michigan that, hey, you know, it was like 0.6 before. Well, it's 0.8. Oh, that's great, because we're at 0.7. We don't know. We have no way of knowing. Employees of the USDA, the Agricultural Research Service, received a memo from branch chief staff telling them that the release of documents included but not limited to news releases, photos, fact sheets, news feeds, and social media content would be held until further notice. I don't know what that means if they find, like, hey, there's some salmonella somewhere. There's been some pushback. People have been talking about the Twitter account of the Badlands National Park in South Dakota, which tweeted out stuff about climate change. It turns out, according to the agency, that it was a former employee who was not currently authorized to use the park's Twitter account. I don't know if that's the case or somebody's just covering for somebody, but now the Trump administration probably knows that it's the bureaucrats, the professional bureaucrats who have been at these agencies, who actually are at these agencies because they're trying to fulfill the mission of the agencies, right? It's the Environmental Protection Agency. There is not a single member of the Trump administration who feels that they need to strengthen that mission. All of them feel, start with the premise. Every single Trump appointee will start with the premise that this agency is overreaching. It is being overprotective of the environment. Every single appointee will believe that. And then, and go back, if you didn't listen to that Sam Bagnastos's interview that we did, every one of those political appointees will find the ones in the agency who are the most dedicated to the mission of the agency, and they will make their lives a living hell until they leave. That's what's on the docket for our regulatory agencies. And that's even before the actual nominees get put in place. This, they're just trying to create obstacles to people doing their job. Right? This is just, we're just going to jam a pen, you know, a stick in the works. When Scott Pruitt is head of EPA, he already has a game plan to completely tear the agency apart, to totally disempower the agency, to find the existing statutes that Congress has passed that have empowered the EPA to regulate gases, to regulate cars, to regulate coal-fired power plants, and then to fashion the arguments that say those statutes don't say how they've been interpreted up to this point so that nobody can challenge them and make the EPA do their job. Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, more or less the same thing. So that's what we're in for on the agency level. So all I can tell you is we're going to have like a little moments of this.
See you in the commissary.
Okay. I was going to go to Mick Mulvaney, but let's have a little bit of fun. It's not a huge amount of fun.
Fun let's is have a little very bit of relative.
Very relative. So, as you know, when Donald Trump met with congressional leaders on Monday, and you have to feel bad for Donald Trump, because I'm joking, of course.
No, Sam meant that literally. Sam actually talked about how bad he feels for Donald Trump this morning.
Here he is, finally proving that he could do something on his own. Living his whole life with the dark, dark, dark secret that only folks like Wayne Barrett knew, that his entire empire was a function of his daddy co-signing on everything. Bailing him out, buying chips in his failed, now failed casino, whatever it was. It would literally be like if all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, our membership just exploded. And my dad had just created
Don't worry,
2,000 sock puppet
Don't
emails.
Worry, son.
And just like
5,000 Cedarist is on the way.
I can't
bastard.
Believe it. I can't believe it. Bill Stevens. Bill Stevens 1, Bill Stevens 2, Bill Stevens 3, Bill Stevens 4. All these guys named
Bill
Stevens. We
run the most successful podcast.
This is
the most
fantastic.
Incredible YouTube channel. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
So Donald Trump is living with this deep, deep secret that makes him horribly insecure. And then he becomes president. And he does so without winning the most votes. Okay? He wins the electoral votes, but that is like significantly less sexy. And it just also shows that like the majority of Americans do not like him. And even a plurality of Americans would want someone else, specifically. And then nobody shows up at his inauguration. I mean, some people, but that's like, again, I don't know. I feel the difference between doing this and, let's say, doing a national radio show. At first,
and
it was difficult.
Narcissism is spreading in the culture.
Right. But he looks out there. But, you know, with that said, it's not like there's a lot of other political podcasts that do significantly better based upon what we do. So I can find my little niche. When Trump looks out there, he's got to know the guy he thought wasn't even an American, you know, like triple
way
the size
of
his, way more popular.
And I got to say, I think that any politician, let alone one who isn't clinical, would be disappointed and a little hurt if their inauguration was so pathetic,
absolutely, of course. I mean, it was really, really disappointing.
It was just sad.
It was sad. And nobody would come and do music for him, and nobody wanted to be seen there. And he had
and
to
even
probably...
the performers that did had to like release sort of like weird, ambiguous statements, almost disavowing what they were doing. The whole thing was, and it was rain. It was very low energy.
Yes, and we're talking like he's actually listening, which would be fun. But
you never know.
You never know.
You literally never
know. So here he is. He's feeling very defensive. So on Monday, first day in the office, he's got to come in and he's going to say, hey, I actually did get more votes than she did. It's just that there was voter fraud. And he may not have realized that his boy, Sean Spicer's got to go out and actually see the press that day. He doesn't know how this works. So poor Sean Spicer. And when I say poor, I'm not saying you should feel sympathy for these people. I'm just saying the sad sack. It's just poor, just rolls off the tongue more. Usually I'm used to having empathy, but anybody associated with this administration, no empathy for me. Sorry. So here's Sean Spicer trying to explain this whole voter fraud, illegal vote thing. Now, one thing that you will notice if you have watched a lot of these White House press briefings, regardless of who it was, Ernst or who was it, Bill, I can't remember his name, the first guy for or Gibbs or Ari Fleischer, I'm just going back on some of the ones that stick out for me. The guy from Fox News, I can't remember who passed away. They always refer to we. If they're not, unless they're talking about a specific agency. We believe this, because the whole point of having a spokesperson is so that the administration speaks with one voice. But even Sean Spicer on day two, he's already doing the same thing all those performers who performed, and they were like, well, I actually thought that it was a, I thought it was a different gig, and I got here, and I was like, oh, set up, and then it was, you know. So they're all keeping it at arm's length. Here's Sean Spicer, keeping it at arm's length, basically saying like, yeah, he's crazy, but he is the president.
Oh, yeah. Cecilia.
Does the president believe that millions voted illegally in this election? And what evidence do you have of widespread voter fraud in this election, if that's the case?
The president does believe that. He has stated that before. I think he stated his concerns of voter fraud and people voting illegally during the campaign. And he continues to maintain that belief based on studies and evidence that people have presented to him.
But exactly what evidence? Speaker Ryan today said there's no evidence. The National Association of Secretaries of State say that they don't agree with the president's assessment. What evidence do you have?
As I said, I think the president has believed that for a while based on studies and information he has. John Roberts.
Pause it. Now, usually what they would say in this situation is like, here's our evidence. Like, not the president's out there by himself and other people have given him information and, you know, people are talking to him. We can't stop him from talking to people. Maybe Mike Flynn's kid got in there.
Dad! There's like 20 million dead Guatemalans that voted for Hillary Clinton in a loosely defined conspiracy so that they could have a rape cage at a pizza parlor.
All right. Now this
have a drink and tell President Trump.
So Spicer's trying to keep it at arm's length, and it continues.
Administration, they quietly.
Think it's worth clarifying whether illegal ballots or illegal immigrants.
And I think there's been studies. There's one that came out of Pew in 2008 that showed 14% of people who have voted were non-citizens. There's other studies that have been presented to him. It's a belief he maintains.
Counted improperly, as Dick Durbin says the president personally told him last night. It was that the people who voted.
I think I have asked and answered it. It's a belief that he's maintained for a while, a concern that he has about voter fraud. And that's based on information that's provided.
Pause it. So it's a belief he's maintained for a while, and I believe there are studies out there. There's one from Pew. Incidentally, that study from Pew was repudiated not only by political scientists at the time that it came out, but by the guy who conducted the study. He said his methodology was flawed. Here it is. David Becker, as I've noted before, voting integrity better in this election than ever before. Zero evidence of fraud.
Dad, they got to Becker.
But Sean Spicer goes on, Mara Liasson now is very well, very possibly responsible for the lunatics tweeting. Here we go.
Yeah. If 3 to 5 million people voted illegally, that is a scandal of astronomical proportions. Doesn't he want to restore Americans' faith in their ballot system? Wouldn't he want an investigation of this?
Well, this is a huge scandal. Mara, you, as I've noted several times now, he's believed this for a long time, and I think he won fairly overwhelmingly. So he's not. And look, we'll work.
Pause it. He won fairly overwhelmingly, which is also incidentally not the case. So he's not. In other words, there's this massive fraud that's going on. 3 million, that is an enormous number of votes, particularly since he won by 70,000 on the electoral side. Not even. 3 million, that's an enormous amount of votes. Well, he won, so he's not that interested in it.
Investigate something the biggest scandal in American electoral history. 3 to 5 million people voting illegally?
I think we'll see where we go from here, but right now the focus that the president has is on putting Americans back to work.
Turns out that's not his biggest focus because just hours later, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump tweets out that, in fact, we're going to go ahead with a major, major investigation. He writes, I will be asking for a major investigation into voter fraud, including those registered to vote in two states, those who are legal, and even those registered to vote who are dead, and many for a long time. Depending on results, we will strengthen up voting procedures. Turns out Bannon, his advisor, registered in two states.
But that's different, because he's white.
And he voted for me.
And he voted for me. Do I need to spell out the subtext here?
You know what's amazing is that if we did a show today where we were like, look, we're left-wing, but we got to be honest, there was massive, huge, overwhelming voter fraud. We could get, like, we could both be up for the Spicer gig after he gets fired, if he found out about it. These guys, they have I guess it's like an internet show. They admitted it, and they're Democrats. We should give them top-level jobs.
Top-level guys.
And there's that kid with the soundboard.
The guy worked with Busey. He's got to be good.
Spicer already looks like he's going to have a nervous breakdown.
I think so.
Spicer's going to be fired in a couple of weeks.
I think it's going to be a sort of a mutual situation. Here is Sean Spicer trying to come up with, I get the feeling he didn't expect this question. He's leaving. He's like, I've got to brush up on what jobs do black people hold? Here is Sean Spicer responding to April Ryan. She is from the American Urban Radio Networks. April Ryan has a question. Yeah, of course. I knew it. I'm sorry. Did you say urban? Can we get Ben Carson in here?
What do you want, a job, honey, at HUD?
Here is... April Ryan asking Sean Spicer to comment on the Donald Trump's lack of meetings with civil rights leaders.
On the issue of race, going back, because you talked for a long time yesterday on the issue of race, and I wanted to ask you a couple of things. And I talked to the current head of the NAACP, who is accusing this administration of something called stereotyping by omission, saying that the president has met with athletes and entertainers, but yet has not met with civil rights leaders. And during his inauguration speech, he talked about inner cities, urban areas being riddled with gangs, violence, and drugs. What is the agenda? What are you planning when it comes to...
Well, I would just, April, I mean, just the other day, he sat down with Martin Luther King Jr. I would call him a civil rights leader.
Not of course, where his dad was the
third.
Well, I think that he has done. I mean, I think he has done a lot for that. There's a lot of the pastors that he's
met
with.
Pause it. We're gonna go back just a little bit. I just want you to pick up on that one. Sean Spicer, just not aware that Martin Luther King Jr. was a separate person from Martin Luther King III's son. I mean, that's a mistake anybody could make if they were under the age of 9. But I like also where he says he's done a lot of that. He refers to...
He's done a lot of black people time.
He's done a lot of that.
A lot of colors at the hotel.
So
what's the problem?
Spicer wants to come up with like other professions that Donald Trump has met with that are black people. And he's like, preacher?
We've had a Pullman porter in the White House.
We have, I don't know if you've seen those pictures that we have put out. There are waiters.
There are drivers. The president's always been very progressive in terms of allowing black people to drive him. His father, as an example, did not allow that.
There you go. Let's hear back on Sean Spicer.
What is the agenda? What are you planning when it comes to?
Well, just the other day he sat down with Martin Luther King Jr. I would call him a civil rights leader.
Not of course, where his dad was the
third.
Well, I think that he has done. I mean, I think he has done a lot for that. There's a lot of the pastors that he's met with. He has met with a lot of individuals on that issue throughout the campaign. They've come up and down the tower. He's brought them in and out of the camp during the campaign and during the transition.
He allowed them in the front entrance of the tower.
I did a seance.
He did.
I did a seance.
I did. I got you. It was a Ouija board.
I was talking to his bust the other day.
By the way, I think you're doing an incredible job. We are totally on the same wavelength. And I don't want to put everyone on the spot, and I won't raise my hand on the board. But if I were alive today, I would have voted for you because we need jobs big time. We're getting killed at the border. We're getting killed at the border and on trade.
As you can see, I have Martin Luther King support.
The look on Sean Spicer's face is...
Yeah, no,
he's just smirking at her and then he interrupts her.
Right.
It's not good.
Nailed you. He spoke to Martin Luther King Jr. the other...
Another thing you need to do is stop letting the EPA send out tweets until Pruitt's in there so we can reintroduce lead into the drinking supply. That's the beloved community I'm talking about. We are totally on the same wavelength.
All right, one last thing. Well, I guess we should go into the fun half. One other quick point. We'll do the Mick Mulvaney stuff, where Mulvaney, of course, was one of the founders of the Freedom Caucus. He's Trump's budget director, or nominated. We're not going to get to this quite yet. I want to just do this, but he of course, wants to cut Social Security and Medicare, and Donald Trump famously said that he wouldn't cut Social Security and Medicare. Or at the very least, he told Paul Ryan, you can't say that during the campaign.
And he was right.
He was right. But Minnesota passed a health plan. I don't know too much of the details. However, I did see something that was tweeted out, and I followed up on this. There was a Minnesota Republican in the Minnesotan House. A guy named Drazkowski, who had an amendment that he wanted to put on this Minnesota health plan. And the idea was lower the costs of health insurance. Now, when the Republicans roll out their plan, this is going to be, I think, indicative of its design. We're going to lower the cost of insurance. But what you buy will really ultimately only be insurance in name. Because here is a list, a brief list. There's actually 34 things on here. I don't have time to read all of them. But the following health issues will no longer be required in health insurance coverage under his amendment. And I'm just telling you this to illustrate what it's going to look like. And you won't hear this part of it when they start talking about the Republican plan. You'll hear maybe diminished coverage on certain things. You'll hear the words catastrophic. Here's a partial list of things that are not covered. Maternity benefits. Well, of course. Why would you discriminate against people who are not having babies? Inpatient care for maternity patients. Family coverage requiring babies from birth are covered. Dental and pediatric coverage, podiatric, so foot doctor and dental, not, you don't need that for health insurance. Child health services and prenatal care, not necessary to have insurance, including insurance. Addiction services, not necessary. Services for emotionally disabled, not necessary. Ambulatory mental health services, not necessary. Outpatient medical surgical services, not necessary to cover. Services for those that are ventilator dependent, not necessary to cover. Lyme's disease, which can be chronic for years and very debilitating, not necessary. Diagnostic procedures for cancer, that's not necessary to cover in insurance. Fibrocystic condition, not necessary. Cancer treatment, not necessary to include in the health insurance. Can sell you health insurance, and it doesn't cover any of the things I've just mentioned, including cancer treatment, and it's health insurance.
What are we left to cover?
Diabetes.
I mean, honestly,
family therapy. Second opinion for mental health and chemical dependency. Chemical dependency and alcoholism. Suicide attempt exclusion. Prostate cancer screening. Direct access to OBGYN. Off-label drug use, not necessary to cover. Antipsychotic drugs, that's not necessary to cover with health insurance. Mental health, not necessary to cover. Court-ordered mental health services, not necessary. Home care nursing, emergency services, continuity of care, specialty care. On and on. That's their vision of health insurance. So,
literally, what is left? I don't, I mean, I can't.
Broken bones?
I guess broken bones.
There's plenty of stuff left. There's a lot of things that can go wrong with you as a person. Yeah. It's just that this is a whole lot of things. And if you get this, and you will recall that of all bankruptcies. I don't know what the figure is today. 50% of all bankruptcies were from health-related issues. Personal bankruptcies. I think we're probably going to go back to somewhere along that, and then I would say you can probably bet it's going to be a little bit higher. So now, folks, it's time to go to the fun half.
Stein, 2020.
Can we, do we have anything that's like genuinely fun? Yeah, I guess Melania. You know, yesterday we did a video about Melania with Trump at the inauguration, and we expressed some sympathy for her because she's being held hostage.
Which we should retract.
But I think we're going to retract it. We'll play this when we get back so that we can actually legitimately save this for the fun half. Folks, 646-257-3920 is the number. You can call, be part of the show. It's your support that allows us to continue to do this program. And it both helps us grow. I would love to add some staff and a little bit more programming as we go into this era, because it's going to be pretty relentless. And There's just a ton of stuff coming to us, and we need to figure out sort of efficient ways of delivering it and getting it to you. And we're working on that. So any support you can give the show. And again, you know, what we give you in return is not only the free show. You keep that alive. We give you extra programming. We give you commercial free. And then the fun half, the fun. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And folks, you can help the show by doing nothing. That is, go to majority.fm/review. Is that what it is? Right? Give us a review on iTunes. And that helps. Yes, Kelly?
You can also go on YouTube while the show is live streaming and donate via Super Chat.
Oh, yeah. What is that whole Super Chat thing?
Well, YouTube is doing it with a few different channels, and we're one of them. It's in beta. And if you...
Total beta.
And if you donate, I think, $5 right now, your comment will be pinned to the top for a while. So,
oh, geez.
Yeah, that's something that
we had a $5 really one yesterday.
Was it was it a troll?
Yeah, it was a troll.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I would imagine
that's okay.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, if you want to troll us by giving us money.
Yeah, seriously, it's totally fine. But you might like the chat. Also,
All right, quick break. We come back. 646-257-3920 is the number. It is majority.fm/review on iTunes. Your reviews do help. It pushes up the charts a little bit. I don't know how much they help, but that doesn't hurt, and it doesn't take much time. So help us. 646-257-3920. We got a bunch of calls, and we'll take your IMs. See you in the fun half.